Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Chase Thomas podcast, the Friday edition. We're recording this on a Thursday night, but this episode and all future college basketball shows will pop up in your feed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, on the Friday edition of this very podcast. College basketball, along with Go Big Orange Friday, popping in right now. That will follow right here with young Kim Pom himself, the Tennessee basketball connoisseur. Stats by Will. Will, good evening, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well today. It's a nice Thursday. We're back from vacation. The month of October is upon us. Basketball season grows closer day by day. We feel pretty good right now.
Yeah, I would just prefer that the weather would go down in the temp department. Like, it was beautiful on my walk today. And Knoxville is just a beautiful area in general, in East Tennessee as a whole. But, man, I don't know. It's just, it's so weird that it's 80 degrees and the leaves are falling and everything. I'm just tired of it. I'm tired of wearing shorts and the t-shirts. I'm ready for cozy season, and we're not quite there yet, unfortunately, Will.
I know that's that you're talking to the right person. I cannot stand this 81 degree stuff. I've got my official fall outfit is the same every year, a hoodie and shorts, to where it's like you go outside and you're a little cool, but you're not all that cold, where it's like, you know, 60 or whatever. That's perfect. I need that weather to get here. 81 is a little extreme for October for me.
Oh, it's not a little. It's extremely extreme. And, like, we're supposed to be going to pumpkin patches and haunted houses and celebrating the fall. But, no, it just feels weird with this level of heat. But it looks like it's going to cool off this weekend. And that concludes our Knoxville Weather Hour on this very podcast, Will. How was your vacation? Did you go to Charleston, I think I saw?
It was Charleston. It was really fun. I know, like, I guess, I don't know if Charleston's kind of got the hype it deserves at this point. I think it probably has, because listed as the best city in the South or whatever. I just love going there, man. It's so nice. I'm jealous of people who get to eat that food every day. I mean, just a really wonderful place to visit.
What was the best thing you ate?
There's this sort of like, I'll go two things. One is more of a fine dining deal. It's called 82 Queen. And I had some awesome jambalaya there and fried green tomatoes as well.
Ooh.
And then there's this place called Lewis Barbecue, which I think is Texas-based. I have to Google to confirm that. But it is probably the second best barbecue east of Texas that I have had. Number one is still Foxborough's in Atlanta.
Oh, yes. Foxborough's is, I mean, Dead End Barbecue is not too bad here in Knox. And Sweet Peas is also pretty solid. But yeah, Foxborough's is the king until, I guess, unless otherwise noted. I miss Foxborough's. Let's not talk about great Atlanta food, because I don't have access to that anymore. So let's not go down that rabbit hole. But we are going to talk college basketball on this very program. Don't forget, folks, you can follow Will on Twitter.com by going to Stats by Will. Go check out his website, statsbywill.com. All of his analysis there. And also, read a series on Tennessee basketball. You can do that 8-part series. How many are up? 5? Is it 5 at this point or 6?
5, and then I think by the time this podcast will be out, the 6th one will be up.
Okay.
So we're nearing the but I've been really pleased with the feedback so far. People seem to really like it, which is very kind of them. But I'm really ready to stop writing about the past and start writing about the present and future.
Absolutely. And I mean, hey, we got open practices. We got Kennedy Chandler taking long range twos in practice today. So Rick Barnes basketball, it will be here before you know it. Also, make sure you go check out ChaseOnesPodcast.com. Subscribe to the newsletter at sportsrenaissanceman.substack.com. Email us if you have a college basketball question you would like Will or myself to talk about on the Friday show. Make sure that you email us at ChaseThomasPodcast@gmail.com. And also, leave us a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts if you are an Apple Podcast listener. Will, let's start. Notre Dame, you're a big Mike Bray guy. It's been noted on this very program that you're a big Mike Bray guy, and they land a big recruit in Starling. What do you make of this recruit, and did it surprise you?
Yeah, I would say it did. I mean, I know the crystal balls were in Notre Dame's favor, 2-4, which is a pretty good indicator that something is going on there. And so I don't know how exactly this came about, but it's the highest rated prospect they've gotten since 2013. Mm-hmm. Number 33 overall in America. So that's not like, not typically your Kentucky or Duke level guy, but the fact they beat out Duke, Maryland, and Syracuse for his services, I would say, is a very good sign. Some seem convinced he's a first rounder and a one and done. I need a little more convincing myself, but I wouldn't be shocked if he's a first round pick one day.
What do you like about him?
Sort of. I mean, he's a fantastic scorer. Like, so the thing that's going to be nice for him, maybe not as nice for Notre Dame, all of their top 6 players run out of eligibility after this season. Mm. So but that's a lot of scoring you got to replace. This guy is a score-first guard, fantastic shooter from all over the court, fantastic scorer. I mean, given the dearth they will have in scoring that he has to help replace, he really could potentially average 20 a night. Like his freshman season. And so he could be the star on what kind of looks like an otherwise unnotable Notre Dame team, barring some transfer portal magic. But I think that it's a good sign for Notre Dame to be getting these guys again, because Bray was getting them a little bit in the early 2010s, but it sort of petered out somewhat. You can overcome middling recruiting in college basketball, of course. I think of the two main sports, football or basketball, a lot easier to overcome less than exciting recruiting, but I think getting one of these recruits is a good sign for them. I think it shows like Bray isn't really done there. It is kind of funny that I've sort of become the Mike Bray defender, because it's not like his results have been great lately, but this is a positive trend. I mean, maybe you need another one of these type circuits, like another top 50 guy to make it stick, but just getting one is a step in the right direction.
Yeah. I mean, it dates back to your Luke Herangode days, right? Like you were just grinding that tape back in the day. You were all in.
I did have to sweat out my Kentucky pick over them in the Elite Eight that one year.
That was... What an athlete, Miss Herangode. What an athlete. He is 33 now. 33.
My God.
We're getting old, man. Well, let's also talk about the other SEC program that got a big addition in Mr. Phillips. Again, we need to make it known on this podcast that Will Wade, like, I just think we need to make it known that contrary to popular belief. Yeah, no, Will Wade is still coaching on the sidelines in Baton Rouge and will continue to do so, it appears. That's a thing. And I would like to remind people, Will Wade is still coaching in the Power Five conference and a college basketball team known as the LSU Tigers. It's a, what a world we live in. That who had him outlasting Sean Miller at Arizona? I don't know, but that is the case, and he's added a lot of talent. LSU looks like they should be pretty solid this year. But what do you make of Phillips going with the Tigers?
I mean, we've kind of had Will Wade's death notice on the door for 3 years now, mm-hmm. and yet recruits still keep coming to this. I mean, it really isn't just Julian Phillips, who we'll get to in a second, but like Trendon Watford came after that all came down, Cam Thomas, Juani Wilkinson, Eric Gaines, you know, a couple of those guys haven't worked out quite as well, but like Watford and Thomas are both awesome. Naz Reid, you know, that sort of controversial Wade team, he was there.
Everyone loves Naz Reid.
I would say, you know, like Phillips, yeah, I would say at worst, like Phillips is on that same level as Reed and Watford. Thomas was seen as like a hair below those two coming out of high school. Obviously, that isn't the case now. But coming out of high school, it was like Reed and Watford would have been, you know, the top two guys for Wade. And I would say Phillips on that level. Will Wade just keeps getting really good recruits, man. I mean, at minimum, he's one of the most exciting day one recruits Wade has ever gotten. I do think he's going to have a really good shot to go one and done, and is trending towards being a late first round pick. Really good scorer, kind of a very good overall offensive player. But I know you're going to be shocked to hear this. I know everybody who's watched LSU basketball the last four seasons is going to be shocked to hear this. The latest LSU five-star main weakness, defense.
Mm.
Nobody on these teams seems to be a lockdown defensive player. If they can figure out a way to coach that into him somewhat, at least get him up to being like agreeable at a college level, then it's obviously not going to be an issue. And his offense is probably going to make it somewhat of a moot point. But I mean, you know, by the time Phillips gets to LSU, it's going to be presumably Wade's sixth season. I mean, we're going to be entering that sixth season in all likelihood without one good defense at LSU. And it's great that Wade keeps reducing in these top five and top 10 offenses, but at some point you got to stop an opponent, and they have had a lot of trouble coming up with those stops in key games.
Mm. I don't know. Where do you have them right now in your SEC pecking order? Where are you putting LSU before the season?
I can't tell if it's controversial or not to have them seventh, but I have them seventh. It is really just, I mean, it's like I mentioned on the last podcast, LSU's starting five really could be one of the two or three best, if not the best in the conference. I love their starting five and what they can do. It's that I haven't seen that sixth or seventh and definitely not eighth player who can provide the depth when, you know, eventually you got to go to your bench. And like I've mentioned, you know, we're going to enter year five of Wade this year, and we haven't seen anything resembling a good defense. So until further notice, it's like they're kind of capped out. Sort of in that, well, I'll loosely call like fourth to seventh range in the SEC,
mm-hmm.
where I wouldn't be surprised if LSU ends up being pretty freaking good this year. But I also wouldn't be surprised if we get to Selection Sunday and it's like, oh, LSU is an 11 seed because they gave up 83 points a game.
Mm. Yeah. What do we need to coin a term for where Georgia's at as a college basketball program in the SEC. What is the dog dungeon? What do we call this? Where the dog sit?
Well, the term is the cool zone, right?
Mm.
Where you're kind of beyond the pale. Georgia's in the cool zone as a program.
I like it. Let's move forward. We got your Michigan Wolverines. Like, what? How does that work for you, Will? I don't know if we've discussed this on air. If Michigan were to be matched up with the Vols in the Final Four this year, which way are you leaning? Who do you want to see win that Final Four matchup?
Luckily, I have a little experience here mm-hmm. based on 2011 and 2014.
Mm-hmm.
The short explanation is that my dad is a Michigan graduate, and so I grew up rooting for them as well. But mm-hmm. My degree is from Tennessee. I would root for Tennessee.
It's okay.
Yeah, it just kind of goes there.
There you go. I like it. What do you make of... There was a stunner this week that Juwan Howard's son might not go to Michigan. Like, that... I was stunned that he ended up at his father's alma mater and where he is currently the head coach. Were you Were you shaken up when you saw the news break out this week?
No. I did not allow myself to be sucked in by the. I noticed there was a little bit of steam where it was like, "Hey, Jet Howard doesn't want to play for his dad," mm-hmm. and I was like, "Okay, cool. He's still going to Michigan." It's like I didn't hear anything on the Michigan side of things where it seemed like they were worried. So I'm really curious to see what he ends up being there. The consensus kind of seems to be like he's just that slight hair below five-star status. So he is a legit, really good basketball player. Their comparison seems to be to Franz Wagner. If he lives up to that, then he has heavily outperformed those recruiting expectations, because I think we've all sort of underrated Franz Wagner in hindsight. But no, I wasn't surprised by it. He's going to be an excellent shooter. It's funny that he gets to play for Juwan because, really, on face value, he's like a perfect beeline era player to me. Like the ideal Stauskas knockdown shooter that kind of learns his freshman year and then his sophomore year he takes over.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know. But it's also one of the cooler names, I think, in sports, right? Jet yes. Howard is a cool name. That is a cool, cool name.
Yes, I think it works really well with Howard specifically. Mm-hmm. Jet just sounds good off the tongue.
Yes, Jet is like either, but also Jet Howard, if you were to tell me that was a quarterback out of East Texas, would not surprise me either.
Yes, UTEP quarterback Jet Howard.
That I could see that. I absolutely could see that. Noted. Just I don't know what to call this program. Like, they're just John Calipari just putting in work this offseason after a brutal 2020 campaign. Looks like Sharp is reclassifying in Lexington. What do you make of this?
If this is what he wants to do, then do it. Might as well.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if he would actually want to use up a year of eligibility this way. Because
mm-hmm.
I think it's from a Tennessee perspective, we do have two cases of this. Jarnell Stokes was the first about a decade ago now. And then obviously most recently Santiago Vescovi. It worked out for them to where both could play, like, and the teams they came to really needed them. Like, they needed those players badly when they became eligible. The Sharp thing is interesting because on surface level, would you say like Kentucky really needs Sharp this season?
I don't think they need him, but I just, based on what happened last year, like, he's not going to say no. I think it's better to have more in the chamber than not enough. So I think this is a good problem to have, but I don't think they need him. But I think Calipari is like, whatever I can do to ensure what happened last year never, ever, ever happens again, right? Like, you need more just top end young talent to throw at the dartboard if some guys in front of him don't work out, you know?
Yeah, I would be honestly more excited to see him get a full year, and I think he will regardless with the semi-super team next season.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of how, Hamidou Diallo did it. He got a ton of extra weight room time, bulked up significantly. He didn't play a game for the Malik Monk team, but that next year he came out and, he's obviously, made a small career for himself in the NBA. Sharp is, quite a bit better coming out of high school, a lot more hyped.
Mm.
So I would think, if he wants to reclassify and he wants to play, he will play. The next question is just like, does that level play keep him not only number one in the 2022 class, but number one for this upcoming draft if he were to come out?
Mm. That I cannot answer, and we won't know until months and months down the line. It's an interesting wrinkle, though.
If he's as good as many believe, which is that he's exactly Levine, was current Levine in college, mm-hmm. Kentucky is obviously a top five team and a very serious Final Four contender once he becomes eligible. But I'm just interested to see how that works. We don't have a ton of examples of this happening at schools that don't need it. Like, Kentucky mm-hmm. will probably be a comfortable top 15, top 10 team this year without Sharp. it's a little different, you know, like the Vescovi example, where that Tennessee team was flagging fast and they needed anything in the way of scoring. Like Kentucky wouldn't really need scoring in theory. So I want to see how that happens. I'm also kind of excited to see John Calipari's I'm back season, where it's like everyone left me for dead, and guess what? I'm not dead. So
why are you excited about that? I'm not excited about that at all. I don't want any part of that. I enjoyed last year. I hope it continues.
It ends in Matt Jones sending out a really sad tweet after like an Elite Eight loss. That's the exciting part.
Ooh, wow, he's caught in the crossfire. What did Matt Jones do to you? KSR does a great work. I don't know what you're doing here, Will. It's the second time you're trying to get me involved in other Twitter fights this week. What are you doing to me?
Yeah, I've learned my lesson. I will never express an opinion on a J star N, G R star D star N ever again.
God, that it, what a week. What a week, Lemon. Oh man. So let's move to the mid-American. I've got the AAC on the brain, because Conference USA and the AAC are talking about some sort of agreement, and we'll see what happens there. But man, just a lot of movement and a lot of different conferences to keep up with. But there was a really good piece in ESPN.com with all the usual CBB experts weighing in on the mid-majors going into 2021-2022. Very Gonzaga heavy, as expected here. But when you scan their expectations for the mid-major schools, mid-major conferences, highlighted by the Missouri Valley, where we're all just big Drake Bulldogs, all of us, whoops among us, is not a Drake Bulldog diehard after their magical run last year. Great game, though. Great game. Was that the title game for their conference? Was that what that was? That was on
yes.
Late? Okay.
Title game, and then they had the, it was like a, what was it, 53-52 to Wichita State in the first four.
That's what it was. That's what I'm thinking of. It was Wichita Drake in the first four. That was a delight, an absolute delight. Yeah. So what do you make of this? Do you agree by and large? Is there any pick that you vehemently disagree with, or were you mostly nodding along when you were going through this?
I thought they were all reasonable takes. I didn't see anything that stood out as like poor, like nothing where I was like, oh, your reasoning there at all. All of it I thought was pretty good. I mean, and I would say the small disagreement I have is making Buffalo the coincidentally the Mid-American Conference favorite. I would have Ohio ahead of them, but Buffalo is a perfectly fine second pick. So I mean, on the whole, there wasn't anything that stood out to me as, you know, grossly wrong or incorrect.
I don't disagree. If not Zaga, who do you think is most likely to be the best mid-major in 2021-2022? If it's not Gonzaga and it's not led by Chet Holmgren and Mr. Timmy, like, if you had to go a different way, who would you go with as the most likely not name Gonzaga to break through?
Yeah, see, I would preface this with saying that it would take like multiple catastrophic Gonzaga injuries for anybody to be better. But that being said, I think my pick and a lot of people's, maybe not obvious pick, because I was looking at this and I saw a couple other selections, but it's got to be St. Bonaventure. I mean, that's the only other mid-major. If I had a top 25 vote, which luckily I don't, I think it'd be a little embarrassing for me to try and stand up to honestly much smarter writers. The only
we'll
one
get you there. We'll get you 25. The Chase Thomas podcast bump. We'll get you there.
St. Bonnie's would be top 25, and I honestly could be swayed to have them in a top 15. That is a team that I fully expect to win a ton of games. I know we've kind of gone into my Bonnie's love the last couple times we've recorded. My comments here, you know, obviously it just continues to be a team with a lot that returns, a ton of experience. They're going to be really tough defensively. That is a roster that is going to make you work for your points, which is obviously really exciting to think about from a mid-major perspective, because those are the type of teams where you look up and, hey, they're in the Sweet 16. I do think it's a shame, though, that because of their newfound tough-out status, they don't really have a single signature home game on the books. The best home opponent they've got is either Buffalo or Northern Iowa, and they've got some neutral site fixtures that could be quite interesting. Obviously, UConn, I think, is a top 20-ish team. Virginia Tech, people seem to be in on. And they have the potential of playing, I think, Ole Miss in West Virginia in a early season Thanksgiving-ish tournament. But still, they don't really get the ultimate experience of playing those good teams at home like Gonzaga gets to. But because of that, one, I think they're going to run through the Atlantic 10 pretty easily. Mm. That's like, you know, they play 18 conference games. I think they're going to win like 15, 16. And then two, that's a team I look at and I'm like, yeah, 28 wins, 5 seed.
Mm.
They're going to win a bunch of games. Like I can't wait to see them play. That UConn game in December in particular is going to be really fun. It is kind of a shame that they don't get a second signature-ish game in there. I mean, they'll get to play Richmond, they'll get to play VCU and St. Louis and whatnot, but I do wish they had a chance to play another. I honestly wish they had a chance to play Villanova.
Mm.
Where I'm like, you know, I think Villanova would win, of course, but St. Bonaventure could give them a really good 40-minute game.
I don't hate that. But their time will come. They're a team that everyone like, what do you think about what do you think about St. Bonaventure? And you're just like, I've been saying it for months. I've been shouting from the rooftops that St. Bonaventure was going to get here. You're going to win a lot of money, because I don't think a lot of people are going to buy in on the Sweet 16 and Elite 8 run for the Bonnies in their brackets. And you'll just go ahead and pencil them in no matter where they fall. So don't tell us we did not warn you folks ahead of time that the Bonnies are legit. Are you a Belmont guy and a Casey Alexander guy? Like, can I tell you my favorite Knoxville Belmont story that's happened since I've been here?
Yes, I'd love to hear this.
Okay. So I've always just like known about Belmont. The Belmont basketball stuff has always fascinated me, and like why they're so good and just where they are. And I don't know, just looking at them as like the Gonzaga of the Southeast, miniature version. And always being fascinated, but I'm the kind of person that like I'll connect with somebody based on like the sports stuff they'll wear. Like, it's always like really uncomfortable when you misread a situation on that. I don't know if you've been here, but like I will ask, I guess because this is what I do for a living, and this is like I'm the sports renaissance man, and I just know a lot about, like, the reason I got coined that years ago was that like I know a little bit about a lot of stuff. And I read and keep up with everything, and there's obviously some that I'm more familiar with than others, but like by and large, I could tell you the starting left tackle for the Green Bay Packers and also tell you who's starting at the five for the West Virginia basketball team. So like stuff like that is all useless information that I just have just powered into my skull. Great use of my time. However, all that being said, the reason I bring that up is because like I will go out, and if I see somebody in a Packers shirt, I'll be like, oh, what do you think of Aaron Rodgers and blah, blah, blah. They're like, oh, it's just a shirt. And I'm like, oh, why do people do that? It always weirds me out that people like will wear sporting attire and then not care at all about what they're wearing. That makes no sense to me, because I look at it as like an invitation to me talking to you and being like, hey, what do you think of blah? Or like, man, your left tackle situation's not been going well. Why is that? And they're just like, oh, I've watched 3 games in 7 years. And I'm like, oh, okay. Well, there's no connection here. I'll get back to your meal. And this man in Knoxville at a restaurant here, he had a Belmont hat on, and it caught me off guard, but I perked up because I was like, oh, I'd never see any Belmont gear. And I went over and I asked him about why they've kind of why they had a bad year. And I was like, what happened here? Because it seemed like this and this and this. And he looked at me stone faced and was like, dude, I graduated from there 10 years ago. Haven't watched a basketball game since. And I was like, oh, okay, well, have a good night. And that was it. Like, just, he was so bummed that I even asked him about the Belmont hat, and was like, he forgot he was even wearing a Belmont hat. And I just asked him this really specific question about what was going on with Belmont basketball, and did not get an answer. And not only that, I think I made him feel bad for not keeping up with Belmont, because he had no, like, I was basically speaking a different language to him.
Mm. Yeah. Well, see, I own a Belmont shirt. I bought it many years ago.
I would wear Belmont gear.
I grew up in the, you can wear it. I got to find it. But I grew up in Middle Tennessee. Rick Bird is kind of like...
Yeah, like, I know Rick Bird. No one knows who Rick Bird is. I asked him about Rick Bird in the thing, and he's like, I don't know. Like, just no idea. No idea.
Yeah. So they've always got a soft spot in my heart. Mm-hmm. I will always be pro Belmont. And so, yeah, I'm a Belmont guy. They return almost everything from mm-hmm. the awesome team they had last year. The fun bonus here that is going to be kind of cool to see if anybody rises as a real challenger. And I do have a challenger in mind. And I'll get to. They're playing out the string in this dying Ohio Valley Conference. I want to see that makes the visiting crowds or the crowds on the road a little tougher. You know, what happens? Do they get less calls? You know, let's be honest. We'll see what happens there. But the issue with being all the way in on this team in particular is that you have to contend with two things when it comes to Belmont and kind of teams in these similar OVC style leagues. One, almost never, unfortunately, do you get a two-bid league. Two, that's a problem when Murray State is also really good, which I think they will be this year. It's going to be Belmont, Murray State, and then a huge gap to the rest of the field. I know Morehead State won it last year, but Morehead is a clear tier below both Belmont and Murray. But I think just like it seems like they do every year, Belmont's going to win a ton of games. Casey Alexander seems to be really good at this. I think, you know, people may have expected a hair of a drop off for them after Bird retired, and it really hasn't happened. Like, Alexander's just kept things rolling. I mean, it helps that they play basically the exact same style, of course, but they're going to sneak up on a team, and they have a couple of good opportunities this year. A team that not necessarily overlooks them, but just can't stop them. I mean, Belmont can shoot you out of a gym, and I am really excited to see them play a team we discussed earlier, LSU, on November 22nd.
Mm. It is just weird, though, that, like, the reason I brought it up to him, I was like, Alexander hasn't, I mean, part of it, I guess, because the postseason was not held a year ago, that they didn't, obviously couldn't qualify for the big dance, but, like, they have not made it past the round of 64 in, like, okay, so, it, yeah. Yep. I was gonna say ever, yeah, and they like just I don't know, their records are always preposterous in conference play, but they can't get over the hump. They're just not there. I don't know, it's very strange. Also, with Bird growing up in Knoxville and his dad writing about him, the men's basketball team, is it not just preposterous that Bird never was the head coach of Tennessee basketball with how many coaches we cycled through? Like, he never got it.
Yeah,
like,
and especially especially given the time of some of the hires. Like,
exactly.
When Tennessee hired Kondo in 2011, that probably would have been the perfect time to do the Rick Barnes thing, but with Rick Burt, and be like, play out the string of your career here, make this team play above their weight, and you get 5 or 6 years or whatever to make it happen.
Yeah.
It would have worked, I think.
I think so. I mean, he was, what, 30-5 that year? Something like that?
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I think Belmont will be good this year, and they should be someone to keep an eye on. In the Missouri Valley, Drake or Loyola for you?
I'm pro Loyola. Disgusting to say. And they have caused me a heartburn. But the cool thing here with this conference is, you know, in opposition to the Ohio Valley point I just mentioned, you could make a case for it being a two-bid conference again. Drake, I think... people kind of see Loyola and Drake on the same level. I think Loyola is a bit ahead, not like a massive step, but a step. But Drake is going to be really good again. I'm excited to see, you know, Roman Penn back, Hemp Hill back. They've got a very, very, very senior heavy rotation, which almost always bodes well for regular season success. And I think if they can get to March, that's a team where you're like, they're really experienced. They're not going to sweat it out too much. They're going to be hard to beat. Loyola, kind of a similar thing, less senior heavy, but still pretty upperclassmen heavy. It's going to be hard to replace Big Cam, one of the most wonderful basketball players college basketball has seen in decades. But, I mean, like, Braden Norris is really cool. Lucas Williamson is an awesome defensive player. That's going to be a really fun battle to watch start to finish. And I think it really is going to go from all the way down to the wire, both with the regular season title and with the conference tournament. And the cool thing for Loyola is they get a couple of opportunities to not necessarily pick off, well, one would be a signature win, but, you know, they have a couple of opportunities to get some key high major wins. You know, Michigan State is the obvious one in mid-November, but a key one that I am very, very intrigued by and cannot wait to see, because I think I know how it's going to come out, them playing at Vanderbilt on December 10th. Now, we talked last episode about how we both think Vanderbilt's kind of escaped the sicko zone, but Loyola, I mean, if they win that game, that's going to be a good thing to look at, because at minimum at year's end, that's Q2. And if Vanderbilt plays above their level a bit and is a top 75 team, they've stolen a quadrant one win. That would be massive for their, you know, potential at-large case. And Drake kind of gets the same shot because they get Richmond, Belmont, and Clemson and St. Louis all in non-conference play.
I don't hate it. Oh, the dog hates it. Khaleesi the dog was not a fan of that last day. We also don't really know what kind of coach Drew Valentine's going to be, right? Like, we're going to have to see, because it might be a situation where this was all Porter Moser, right? Like, that's a possibility. We don't know. It runs in the family, though. Valentine's dad's a longtime coach. His brother, obviously, is a bunch of success at Michigan State. He's been an assistant under Moser for several years. But I don't know. We'll have to see what that looks like, if there is a drop off there. I don't know. We can't speculate beforehand, but we'll have to see if losing Mr. Moser is a huge, huge problem, and that they go back to what they were before. Are you concerned about that?
A little. I don't think it will affect them as much this year. It's just that really, like we mentioned, upperclassmen heavy. They can kind of do a continuation thing from
that we won't know for a couple of years. It's the Coker situation. We won't know until, like, cause it's not his players yet, and we'll have to see.
I would say year three, you will start to know if it's, you know, the Moser leftovers or if it's Drew Valentine.
Have we gotten clarification on why their logo is a wolf and they're called the Ramblers?
No, I would love to know that.
I need answers.
We need a Loyola expert on this podcast, honestly, because they are at this point one of the most well-known college basketball teams.
That is wild, right? Like, they are really one of the Tennessee. Let's add them to the calendar. Do we at least have Belmont? I don't think we do, right?
No, Tennessee has some, and obviously Memphis is the key.
Yes.
In state comp, but I mean, I'm looking at it now. It's just UT Martin, East Tennessee State, and Tennessee Tech, and that's it for in state.
Tennessee State?
No, MTSU, I think fans would be fine with scheduling at this point, but I think they sort of swore off scheduling Belmont because late in the Pearl years, they had a couple of big time Belmont scares that resulted in like 2-point wins.
Yeah.
And they have not bothered to put them back on. So,
but see, that's just silly to me. Just don't run from it. Like, whatever. It can only help your team. I don't understand that. It can only help your team. And also, it's just great and better for the product, for the fans. All right, Will. Well, how do the good folks keep up with your work on statswhywill.com and what to check out with your latest installment of Tennessee basketball?
Yeah, so statswhywill.com is where all my stuff goes. I'm excited for the season ahead. The 8-game series on Tennessee's modern history concludes next Friday, October 22. And then after that, it is all 2021-22 season mode. Tennessee season preview comes out in late October. I'm going to have a couple of other non-Tennessee pieces because I like to keep it varied. You know, teams I'm sort of loosely in and out on, and then some basic expectations for the season.
There you go. Follow him at StatsByWill on Twitter.com. Go check out all of his great pieces and keep up with them as this season gets ready to get started. StatsByWill.com. Go check it out. Bookmark it today. Make sure if you like listening to Will and I, make sure you leave this episode a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. Go check out ChaseThomasPodcast.com. And yeah, every Friday you'll have college basketball from Will and I in your feed. So check that out. And Will, I will talk to you next week.
Awesome. Thanks for having me on.
right, hello, and welcome back to a Friday, but we're recording this on a Thursday edition of, guys, you're not going to believe this, I've rebranded this another time. I just have so much fun rebranding, so I'm rebranding this again. Rocky Top Let's Rock is just too long for me, it's too long. So what I'm going to do, it's Go Big Orange Friday. That's what we're doing. It's going to go up on Fridays. Yeah, Go Big Orange Fridays. That's what I'm going with. GBOF. GBOF is what I'm doing. Ryan Shumpert is here of Rocky Top Insider, as he is every week. Ryan, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Doing well. Like the rebrand. I think that flows well. I think it's got a nice tone to it to go with the Friday Vols episode. So I like it.
There you go. Also here, Ethan Stone of the UTK Daily Beacon. Ethan, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
I'm good. I'm going to echo Ryan's sentiment. I like it. It rolls off the tongue well.
Can y'all hear the lawnmower going on in the background here?
Barely. Barely.
I cannot.
I was wondering, took the dog on the walk before we started recording here in the home studio, and I was wondering if he was going to start or he was wrapping up his lawn care today, and he just started. So shout out to my guy with no remorse, no questions about who's doing a podcast in the general vicinity. So shout out to him getting that work in on this beautiful fall Friday. Like the leaves are falling. It's still a little too hot for my taste, but you know,
still too hot. Yeah,
still too hot. But fall. Fall in the mountains is a beautiful, beautiful thing. Guys, let's start with what happened on Saturday. I was in the building for this. The black uniforms were back. No helmets due to COVID and not being able to get the number of helmets they needed to do a black uniform, black all the way out. But it seems like that's coming, and especially because they won. So if they had played poorly against South Carolina home, I wonder if we see black uniforms anytime soon. Players wanted it. There was the cool stuff after the game. The Al Wilson stuff was awesome. You had Heupel revealing Leonard Little was like giving pointers to defensive linemen while he was there. It was great. A great day all around. Folks came up for it. Ethan, let me start with you. What do we learn from Tennessee shellacking South Carolina on Saturday?
I think the most important thing to talk about would be the second half. I mean, that's kind of the downtrodden part of the beatdown, I guess. It's more fun to talk about the first half, but the second half is the thing that is more telling, in my opinion. You know, it's first-year head coach, Heupel, you know, it's going to happen. They're going to have down quarters, and it doesn't necessarily translate to Tennessee not being ready or anything like that. I think it's more Heupel just wanted to run the ball, and South Carolina knew that was going to happen. Heupel just wanted to end the game. And so you come out of the quarter with three straight rushes, punt, next possession, three straight rushes, punt again. That slows it down a little. That kind of kills the tempo that Heupel was coming after in the first half. But I don't look too much into it, really. I don't think it's going to be a problem going forward. But to kind of go more on the positive side, obviously that first half was just ridiculous. It was just an extension of the Mizzou game. I think I actually tweeted that I thought it was just Mizzou in South Carolina uniform. but yeah, overall, you know, pretty dominant win. You can look past the second half if you want to, or you can really look into it, but I don't think it's too big of a deal.
Ryan, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, I would say my first takeaway or whatever you want to say is just that the Missouri game wasn't a fluke. Now Missouri South Carolina showed how hard it is to be beaten down like Missouri is for a full 60 minutes, and I think that was a lot to Ethan's point. Simply, second half against Missouri, Tennessee was able to whoever they had in a quarterback or running back offensive line, they were still able to just line it up and run right out. So that wasn't the case against South Carolina, and we didn't think that would be the case. So the fact that not that Tennessee ran it against South Carolina the way they did against Missouri, but the way that their offense played the first quarter was incredibly impressive, because this hasn't been a bad South Carolina defense. Certainly isn't a great one by any means either. So I was really impressed by that, and it seems like Hendon Hooker is just getting more comfortable. Good to see our guy. I guess we haven't talked since the Missouri game. It was good to see our guy, Bayless Jones. Back-to-back big weeks. I think we had our big I think Josh and Alex Golish listened to the show 2 weeks ago. And they said, all right, these guys know football. Mm-hmm. We need to get Bayless Jones involved. And that's what we've seen the last 2 weeks. So I'll be interested to see if that continues. I kind of think it will. And then that was the big takeaway. And then one thing, this is more macro. been a little bit more of an overreaction, but from what we've seen Heupel do at UCF and now what we've seen in 6 weeks against SEC opponents, Tennessee, I think Heupel in his tenure is going to do a good job of beating those teams he's supposed to beat. The South Carolinas, the Missouris, the Vanderbilts. Some years, this year, Kentucky's obviously a lot better. But some years, the Kentucky's, just because I think the way his offense is built, it's just built to expose bad teams and bad defenses. So how much success he can have against the Alabamas, the Floridas, the Georgias of the world when he gets more talent and everything gets even, I think that's still a huge question. But the first run around against those teams that Tennessee needs to separate itself from as a program, what Jeremy Pruitt really wasn't able to do, what Butch Jones wasn't able to do with enough consistency, I think Josh Heupel has shown early that he can do a great job in there, and I think it has the makings to be really good long term.
Yeah, I think if you're a South Carolina or Mizzou fan, you're nervous now. Like, you weren't nervous before the season, but now you're like, okay, Mark Stoops has got UK rolling. Florida is, I mean, as long as Mullen's there, like, they're going to be good. Maybe not great, maybe not championship level, but good. And then you have Kirby and just the juggernaut that is Georgia. But if Heupel has this stuff figured out and he's got this team on the right track and like they're on their way to 8-4, 7-5 years for the foreseeable future with the every now and then 10-2, 11-1 type year, then that's bad news for South Carolina Mizzou, because then there's no path. Then you're like, oh, the road to figuring this out and to getting us back into the upper echelon of the SEC East is just going to be significantly more difficult. And that's without even mentioning that Texas and Oklahoma are coming. So the fact that they're also coming very soon, if I'm a Mizzou and South Carolina fan and seeing how Tennessee just drubbed them before Heupel's even got all of his players in, it's just, you're concerned. I think you're extremely concerned about what your upward mobility is going forward. I don't know what you're excited about, because you're just like, man, that offense was bad. I think Mizzou is just, they weren't as physical, especially defensively, as South Carolina was. Like, South Carolina did not quit in that second half. Mizzou quit. They were done. Like, Mizzou was out. They like, I want to go home. Yeah. I want to get out of here. South Carolina was like, we could come back in this game. The defense did not give up. And they tried to get this team back in it in the second half. But yeah, I don't know. There was a defender. I think it was one of their edge rushers who was celebrating. Did y'all catch that? Celebrating off of Hendon Hooker.
Blowing the kisses.
Yes.
Blowing the kisses to the crowd.
You were down 4 scores. Like, that was preposterous. Like, the stadium erupted where I was. Like, I don't know what he was thinking. I just could not imagine. Can you imagine somebody doing that on Saban or Kirby Smart's team? Like, oh my goodness. Like, immediate pulled for the rest of the game. Just, I couldn't believe what I was seeing there. It's like, you're down 4 scores, settle down. But like you said, Velus Jones showing out. I was very concerned about Tyon, though. Like, that hit looked bad. He was on the ground for a while. But then I think Heupel revealed after the fact that he could have put him back in if he wanted, but they wanted to just, like, the game was over. No sense bringing him back. And, I mean, that's the other big part. Like, Hendon Hooker's figured it out, but Tyon has been one of the best running backs in the country this year per PFF, and it's just, hey, you got to keep him healthy, especially against a team like Ole Miss on Saturday. Ryan, what do you make of Tyon and the health and just the guys that we're getting back for Ole Miss? Because even though you're getting Cooper Mays back, it looks like he's been bad all year long. Like, Cooper's just objectively been atrocious, especially in pass coverage, pass blocking. And then you're like, okay, we're getting some guys back. Jabari Small, getting him back, it looks like will be extremely important. But then you also lose Juwan Mitchell for this season. I don't know. What do you make of the guys the ball should have back on Saturday against the Rebels?
Well, I think it's a big plus. Get Dio Jackson back, even as well as Brandon Turnage played last week. Getting that SEC Defensive Player of the Week, you're going to need all the bodies you can get in that secondary against Ole Miss on Saturday. So I think that's big. Dio still as good as Brandon Turnage has been. Dio has been just as good, too, in the first 5 games of the season, I guess it was. So I think that's big. Cooper Mays one, I'm kind of waiting to see. I mean, Kurt, like you said, Cooper hasn't been fantastic. He really just hasn't even played that much. I mean, he got hurt in the first quarter of Bowling Green game, and I guess he played the whole Florida game, but he got hurt again in the second half of that Florida game and was very visibly injured while trying to play through it in the second half. So we just really haven't seen a ton of Cooper Mays.
He played in Pitt, didn't he?
No, I don't think so.
I thought he played the second week against Pitt. Am I misremembering that? Maybe he didn't play against Pitt.
I'm pretty sure that was the game that Kingston Harris
Okay.
Yeah, Kingston Harris came in and played guard, and then he got hurt in that game, and then that's led to Ollie Lane playing in that spot since. So we haven't really seen a whole lot of Cooper, and you make a good point on just how healthy is Tyon. I'm not exactly sure, but I do think it's big Tennessee gets. He's expected to play and to do get Jabari Small back, because I think they're going to have a lot of opportunities to run the ball well Saturday night, and I think you need as many bodies as you can to do that to keep guys fresh. And not that, you know, Leonard White has been solid. He's certainly been, these last 2 weeks, probably better than I expected, but I still definitely think it's a drop-off from Small to him. So I think having those two good backs on top of what Hooker can do with his legs should be really big for Tennessee's rush offense Saturday.
Absolutely. What do you think, Ethan?
Yeah, you got to be able to match Ole Miss in some way, and not having Evans obviously would be, you know, pretty detrimental. I think I saw earlier today, Heupel said that, shocker, he's not going to release whether or not he's going to be playing. Yeah, so when it comes down, I think Evans will play. I don't think it'll be a huge deal, especially if Heupel was saying he was good to go last week and he just was holding him out for safety precautions. Now, across the board, injury-wise, Tennessee, I noticed with Theo Jackson, DeNico Slaughter especially, Tennessee can't have any more of these, like, phantom injuries that just sneak up on him. And that, like, you know, game tape, they say these players are inactive, or, like, these players aren't going to be going. Because especially with DeJuan Mitchell out, and then you had Theo Jackson out last week, obviously they're probably going to play this week, probably just a minor setback. But having those key guys miss, Tennessee hasn't been at full strength yet this season. And so having depth at running back, having depth at linebacker, especially now with no Mitchell, having depth in the secondary, getting Slaughter and getting Jackson back was going to be huge for Saturday.
Yeah, I'm excited. Well, let's focus on this defense, because one of the things that's interesting about Tennessee is the bend don't break, and Elijah Simmons being just a really great player for them in the defensive line. I don't think anybody saw coming. Matthew Butler's been great. Barron's been great. Still wait and see on Young, but obviously coming in late hurts him a little bit. But you lose Juwan Mitchell for the season, the transfer from Texas. He's been banged up, and we talked about how banged up this linebacker room was coming into the year. So it's Beasley and Banks the rest of the way, health permitting. But the secondary, getting Theo Jackson back is huge. But as a whole, this Tennessee defense does not force turnovers. Like, this is not a turnover-heavy group. It's a bend-don't-break group. Is that something that concerned you, Ethan, going into this game? And have you identified why UT has struggled to force turnovers?
I'm not sure it concerns me. You know, what's been happening so far has been working, but it's also been working against, like, lower to middle-level SEC teams. When you've got Ole Miss, who is explosive, has Matt Corral, has great rushing game behind him, it's going to get to a point where you're going to have to force those turnovers. As to why, not 100% sure. There's a myriad of reasons as to why that might be. A lot of them have just gone through their hands. Christian Charles' first start, he had one right in his hands, dropped it. Jalen McCullough has dropped his fair share, even though I believe he has 3 on the season right now. Just the secondaries dropped their fair share of stuff, and it seems to be they're more, I guess, intent on emphasizing going for the tackle rather than making those game-changing plays. But as to why more interceptions, more fumbles haven't been, you know, forced, I can't answer 100%. But it definitely needs to change if we're going to be talking about beating a team like Ole Miss with a high-powered offense. If we're going to be talking about beating a team like Alabama, Georgia, even in a couple weeks. That's just not going to happen if you can't make those game-changing plays.
Ryan, what do you think?
Well, I'd say, for one, I'm with you. This isn't a very good turnover forcing defense, but the past few weeks they've been solid. I think they've kind of been over your head a little bit. It's been a little deceptive, because last week you had the fumbled snap and then the halfback pass at the 3-yard line that was just bewildering. those were back-to-back offensive plays for South Carolina too, which shows you how well that first quarter went for them. But I do think it's a challenge, or it's a problem, especially Saturday, because Ole Miss hasn't turned the ball over much this year. I mean, that's the biggest, at least from my eyes, that's the biggest change from Matt Corral last year to this year. I mean, he was obviously really talented last year. He just had a couple 3-4 interception games, one against Arkansas. He's cut that off out this year. No turnovers, no interceptions. It's hard for me to see, you know, Tennessee forcing a bunch of turnovers Saturday night, which would be a massive bonus if they could. But I think when you look at why that is, I think some of it, you just don't have a great pass rush. You know, the defense line's been solid, but more guys than not at the interior. And you said Tyler Barron. I think he's been really good, but he's been better in a run than he is at the pass. So I don't think you have a whole lot of a pass rush. Or you can't go out there with four guys and get a ton of pressure on most teams. And then Tennessee's back end, while it's been solid and it's held up and it's been bend don't break, you still don't really have many playmakers back there. And as a whole, it's not some great unit. You know, McColl has three interceptions and he's still, you know, he's not some ball hawking safety or anything. So I think it's more just kind of about the personnel they have, why they haven't been able to force more turnovers, or really why I think it'll show up the next few weeks that they're not a great turnover forcing defense.
Yeah, and what should help, I think, significantly is that since week one, the Neyland Stadium has seen an increase in the number of points of sale offering beer by 68%. It's good that the lines have been diminished a little bit, and we can't understate just how important the increase in beer sales and the double fisting that we're seeing across Neyland. And something else to keep in mind, we're not going to have any sunburn issues this week. The fam and I witnessed a lot of folks in the student section getting some classic old sun poisoning with their orange and white overalls with no sunscreen. A lot of Miller Lights and no sunscreen on Saturday. So that we can't understate how important it will be to have a night game, so the good folks in the student section will not be in jeopardy there. And they'll probably pace themselves throughout the majority of Saturday. So that should also be something to look at, the pace of tailgating for folks all around Neyland and Knoxville on Saturday. But I am excited to see what this looks like. The importance of Velus Jones, Ryan, how do you think he matches up with this Ole Miss group? Do you see another 28-0 jumping off point? Like, is this something we should expect still against somebody like Ole Miss, where the defense is still struggling? And I mean, they're not great against the run. Their defense is, I think, 12th in the SEC right now, per Pro Football Focus. Do you think Velus Jones continues to be a matchup nightmare against what Ole Miss has to offer? Or do you see a different kind of guy stepping up on Saturday?
Well, I think 28-0 or, you know, 28 points in the first quarter is probably going to be, you know, too much to expect. But I do think the offense is going to continue to get off to the fast starts. I mean, every game they really have. And the Pitt game, they should have had more, you know, more chances. They schemed some people up, and Joe Millett couldn't complete those passes. But for one, you know, do expect a fast start for the offense. And I think this is going to be another big game from Velus Jones. I mean, you listen to Lane Kiffin talk this week, and you watch Ole Miss play a little bit. They really struggle with tackling, and that's what Velus Jones is best at, just getting the ball in his hands and letting him make some plays after the catch. And that's really what Tennessee's done in the last few weeks. And I think he'll have a great opportunity to do that this weekend and have a lot of success against Ole Miss.
What do you think, Ethan?
My sentiment is going to be pretty much the same. I've said it for weeks that Velus Jones with the ball in his hand in open space is a deadly combination for a defense. And Tennessee's going against a defense that is worse per PFF than South Carolina. Obviously, you know, South Carolina's got guys like Jalen Foster and got good linebackers enough that could, you know, force those plays against Velus, kind of force them to the outside. And even that didn't work. So against a team like Ole Miss, I think Velus will kind of be in his element. I think there's going to be a lot of opportunities for not just him, but Hyatt, for Tillman to really be able to shine, whether it be in a screen, whether it be in an out, you know, shallow route, something like that. I think at all three phases of the passing game, it's going to be a fun show.
I think so. I do think. What's the over-under? I think it's 82. Is that what I saw?
For 82.5.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, yeah. This is just...
Correct me if I'm wrong, but that's like the highest since like a Texas Tech game against maybe Baylor a couple years ago. I can't remember 100%, but it's up there.
Last thing. How do we see it going? Like, all right, let's get our official predictions in. Ryan, how do you see this going ultimately?
I have no earthly idea. I haven't all week. I've gone back and forth. What I'm going to pick on. I really don't know. This is to your point, Ethan, about the high over-under thing. It just feels so weird. I never have any memory of coming into a Tennessee game with this. You know, it's going to be super high scoring. Anything can happen. I don't really know what to expect in a game like this and how this plays out. You know, right here in Thursday, 2:09 p.m. Eastern time. I'm going to go with Tennessee. I'll say Tennessee gets it done because I do think, you know, like Ethan was just saying, I think this Ole Miss defense is really bad, and I think Tennessee's going to be able to run the ball and make some big plays. But I really think this could go either way, and it's really one of those games that any small mistake, a fourth down stop, a holding to a field goal in the red zone, someone finding a way to force a turnover against these two offenses that have done a great job of taking care of the ball, really, really small things I think are going to be the difference in this one.
Mm. We'll see. We'll see. I've gone back and forth too. I think people who, like, I don't see any way this is a blowout. I don't see one team just unloading. I don't see a 28-0 thing. I could see 21-7, 21-3 or something.
Yeah.
For Tennessee. I think that's real. The hypo first quarter stuff is real, and I don't think Ole Miss has the defense that's going to jeopardize that streak. Now, Georgia and Kentucky, we'll see. We'll see if he's able to have a hot start there. But maybe, you know, with Jonathan Crompton revealing to Charlie Burris on the A to Z podcast. Did you see what he said about Kiffin the week of the Tennessee Carolina game from 10 years ago now?
No.
Okay. So apparently Kiffin knew, do you remember the fullback play? It was the second play of the game where Austin Johnson went on a fly pattern, like straight up the middle, like right through the center, and was wide open. They scored on the second play of the game.
Yeah.
Okay. That play was designed on like Monday. Like Kiffin kept telling Crompton he's running that play, the second play of the game, all week, and Crompton was like, okay, whatever. And like Crompton was getting annoyed about Kiffin just telling him every day that that's what they're running and it's going to work and this is what we're doing. And he's just excited about it every day, and they were practicing it a bunch in practice. And then Kiffin actually calls it on the second play, and he doesn't get picked up. Because he said like South Carolina was going to be in cover zero in that moment, and they were in cover zero. And I watched this game actually, like, I think I did watch this game last Thursday. And he was just wide open. No one picked him up. Cover zero. There was not enough defenders to match up with him. No one saw the fullback going straight at the middle, and touchdown. Like, it was pretty wild. Kiffin, I think, might be a pretty brilliant offensive play caller, is what we learned there from the Crompton analogy. I highly encourage you to listen to that conversation with him and Charlie Burris, but it was interesting. Ethan, your pick.
So I started on Monday saying this is going to be Ole Miss by about 20. The reason I thought that was just Tennessee has built up so much momentum, and it would just be so Tennessee for it to pop right in front of their face and they just lay an egg. But I've gone back on that, and I now think it's going to be very close, and I'm going to share what Ryan said. I have no earthly idea, but I think I'm going to say for the sake of this podcast that Tennessee is going to come on top 41-38.
Mm. You said what was the score?
41-38. I guess I'll give some reasoning to that too. And the reason is Ole Miss just really, really, really does not have a good defense. Like, it's simple as that. We've said it over and over on this podcast, but they just, it's not great. And Tennessee's isn't fantastic either, but it's better. And the offenses are just going to go back and forth. I'm not sure either defense is really going to play that big of a role. It's going to be a lot of scoring. And ultimately, the game is in Neyland. It's at night. There's a lot of hype behind it. You know, Kiffin coming back. And all that stuff, everything that's accumulated so far, I think it'll tip in Tennessee's favor.
I think Tennessee wins this. I've gone, like, that's my final gut instinct, is that Tennessee does win this. Now, am I concerned that Heupel encouraged fans to, what was the adjective he used for this
hostile
Saturday? Hostile, that's what it was. That is certainly a choice. Certainly a word choice for Heupel, because he's new. And I don't think Heupel is in the stands. He's not familiar with what the good folks at Neyland are going to do in a hostile environment for Lane Kiffin. So I don't know if that's the right message to send. I'm not really sure. You didn't really actually need to encourage it, because I think it's going to be that way anyway. But yeah, I'm leaning 45 Tennessee. I'm going to go 45 Tennessee, 40 Ole Miss. I think Tennessee not only covers, I think they win outright. But we'll see. We shall see. I would not be surprised either way, but my gut's telling me this, because This is a big one too for Tennessee, because it's gonna, like, we, this next few weeks are gonna be brutal. Like, what Tennessee has in front of them before South Alabama and Vanderbilt, like, they're going bowling no matter what. Like, that's something we know. You're getting the six, but this is the difference between 7-5, 8-4. Like, that's a very different type of deal, because we can just go ahead and pencil Georgia and Alabama's losses, I think, to this point. But I mean, Kentucky on the road, I don't know yet. We'll see how they fare against Georgia. And then this one right here, these are the last two flip-flop games. And Tennessee won two of the flip-flop games that we were wondering about before the season that would dictate whether or not they go bowling, which was South Carolina and Mizzou. And they blew them both out. So it will be interesting, because we'll know a lot more about Tennessee. And if they can do this, then I think Kentucky is more feasible. That's just, Ole Miss is maybe the second best team in the SEC West this year. We don't know. The West is just interesting. And this is a good litmus test for where Tennessee is and where this defense is and how far Hendon Hooker can take this group. But yeah, that's what I'll go with. Ethan, what can we check out from you at the UTK Daily Beacon this week?
Yeah, so we got a Q&A with the Daily Mississippian sports editor that's coming out momentarily, hopefully. And then we'll have preview, keys and predictions, and full coverage on Saturday.
There we go. There we go. Ryan, what about you at Rocky Top Insider?
A lot of the same stuff. Talked to Nick Suss at the Clarion Ledger earlier today. So have that out. Preview of Ole Miss, some look at Tennessee's offense, kind of by the numbers this week, and then basketball media availability that Ethan and myself will be headed to here in just a second in open practice. So we'll have some, anyone looking for some hoops content this week, we'll have some practice observations later this afternoon, and a little bit more stuff in the next few days following up on that.
And if you're a Vols fan, go check out Stats by Will, his Tennessee basketball series that he's doing on Stats
fantastic,
by Will.
Fantastic.
Agreed.
By Will.
Absolutely.
He's done great. Great work.
It's really good stuff. So go check that out. Basketball season is almost here. Baseball season's almost here. We're about to be oranged out. Like, just all kinds of stuff. The sports renaissance woman is not happy. She thinks I'm joking with the stuff that I'm watching around, like, on the calendar. I'm like, you might not see me until February. Like, it's just too much going on. Like, Tennessee might be playing the same time as the Braves on Saturday night. It's not fair. There's just so much stuff. There's so much content to consume. I feel guilty always complaining about it. I mean, the Preds come back tonight, and the sports renaissance woman and I, we decided we're making the jump. We're investing ourselves in the Preds with the Thrashers. Wow. Rest in peace, gone. I want to dip my toes into one tenant. Like, I have this opening, the NHL opening, the Mighty Ducks, that's whatever. Like, I have a Mighty Ducks why am I forgetting his name? Oh my goodness, I know you guys know his name. Banks from Mighty Ducks.
I haven't watched that movie
in the worst
in 15 years.
Yeah,
15
yeah,
years. What are you doing? That's worth revisiting.
Maybe
every
13
year.
13 years.
Okay.
I feel like I've seen it once a long, long time ago.
This might have been a different era for you guys, because I think I grew up with Bombay and everything. And now, look, is it a great message that a coach who got a DUI got sentenced to coach children? No. Do we overlook it as children? Yeah, absolutely. That was the penalty. Was a DUI was, hey, go coach some kids unsupervised.
Go coach the kids.
Yes, that's what they did. It was a different time, different era. But yeah, I don't know. There was a reason I was going all over the place with this. Why was I doing that? What was I saying before that? I don't know. It's
the Preds getting in.
Oh, the Preds. That's what it was. Okay. Yeah. So we're diving in. We're diving in on the Catfish. We're diving in on Preds. We're gonna go to a game this fall, but yeah, it's time. I have an opening in NHL, like, with the Thrashers being gone forever, the Flames probably never coming back. Like, I don't think Atlanta's ever getting another NHL team, so I need to fill the void. I need to get my hockey fixed. So we're gonna invest in the Preds. So they play tonight against the Kraken, the new Kraken.
Yep. ESPN, I believe.
Yeah, there we go. Yep. I have it DVR'd because I will be at Carnes Oak Ridge with Ethan Stone.
Yes, sir. Go Beavers.
No, that's enough. That's enough. That's enough.
It's the battle of our alma mater.
Oh, man. That's enough. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. But no, it's going to be fun because Oak Ridge can't do anything offensively. So we'll see what happens, and great running back to watch. I'm excited about that. And yeah, thank you as always, guys. And I will talk to you very soon.
No. Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.